Well, we are told that this coming 18th of July will be Mandela's 100th birthday. Not that we expect him to be doing any celebrating, but there is this attempt to make Mandela Day into a new religion. In November 2009, the United Nations General Assembly declared 18th of July Nelson Mandela International Day. Now, that is unprecedented. No other person has a day declared as some international holiday by the United Nations. It's quite extraordinary. They said this was in recognition of the former South African president's contribution to the culture of peace and freedom. The General Assembly resolution recognizes Nelson Mandela's values and his dedication to the service of humanity in the fields of conflict resolution, race relations, the promotion and protection of human rights, reconciliation, gender equality, and the rights of children and other vulnerable groups, as well as the upliftment of poor and undeveloped communities. It acknowledges his contribution to the struggle for democracy internationally and the promotion of a culture of peace throughout the world. Well, that would be very nice if even half of that was true. With songs of praise and hymns glorifying Nelson Mandela being sung by choirs and taught to school children, we seem to be seeing the beginning of a new religion. I have heard Christian choirs in St. George's Cathedral singing Mandela's praises with fists raised, no less, in the cathedral. I even heard at the Evangelism Explosion International Conference that was held at St. George's Cathedral some years ago, the dean of the cathedral welcomed them in the name of Nelson Mandela. Yeah, and immediately after that, they were singing with fists in the air. And I'm sure E.E. would have been horrified, but this was the host that this lovely cathedral. But this, oh, and the chapel to greet them with Salam Alaikum and all the rest of it, and he did Muslim nonsense. It was unreal. The ancient pharaohs were worshipped as gods, for sure. In fact, it took a lot of people and a lot of time and a lot of stones to build these cathedrals, these tombs, these pyramids. And of course, they've been posting pictures of their gods on their walls for quite a while. And they built phenomenal treasure cities just for the dead, for the pharaohs. And so these great pyramids and monuments are basically nothing other than graves. They're tombs. But not just a tomb for the pharaoh, but for all his servants, soldiers, wives, and others who had to be killed at his funeral to go into the next life with him. I mean, let's remember, this was a pretty savage practice. And a lot of people died building these spectacular tourist attractions, which are phenomenal, but bear in mind, a lot of people's lives are dedicated to building the tombs of the pharaohs. And when they made the Aswan Dam, they had to cut and move a whole lot of these statues of the pharaohs to higher ground so they wouldn't be under the new water level. Atatürk, the founder of modern Turkey, also was worshipped very much like a god, and some might have trouble recognizing this, but this is Mussolini's image near Addis Ababa in what was then Abyssinia. And, of course, they believed in worshipping their leader. The chairman of the Communist Party in the Soviet Union were elevated to cult status, Vladimir Lenin being the classic example. This was a vicious, nasty mass murderer guilty of the deaths of millions. But in the case of Vladimir Lenin, his tomb continues to be a site of pilgrimage to this day. From the very beginning when he died, the faithful atheists would line up to see his tomb. And they built in the form of a Egyptian pyramid type style, a tomb to Lenin outside the seat of power in Moscow on Red Square. And this is by the Kremlin, which is their headquarters. Notice they've got space at the top for people to walk around because on May Day, all leaders of the Politburo Soviet Union would gather above Lenin's bones and have their march past. You can see the stairs to the podium where the march past would be seen. Those are people lining up to come to see this corpse, Vladimir Lenin. Now, sorry? Yes, well, I mean, you could get shot for doing the wrong thing. But this isn't actually his body. because his fingers fell off, his nose fell off, his ears fell off, and it's basically plaster Paris. The original taxidermist did not do a very good job. And so this is like Madame Tussaud's waxworks. Nevertheless, there's no doubt he's dead. And so every May Day, you'd have all the legions of hell marching past with their red flags. And they would come right past the tomb of Lenin. And on top of the tomb of Lenin would be the leaders of the Politburo, with the chairman and all the rest of it. And they would be flanked there. This is so symbolic. And you could see the hammers and the sickles and outside the palace of the Kremlin. There you've got Lenin's tomb, the Politburo of the Soviet Union, Communist Party leaders, and all the faithful coming. This is statism. This is worship of a cult figure of the state. And of course, Lenin started the dekulakization, which Stalin continued, which was the land reform, farm invasions, which resulted in 18 million people losing their farms, 11 million people being deported, and more than 7 million being murdered. Perhaps it was up to 11 million may have died of starvation and the massacres during the dekulakization that Lenin started and Stalin continued. When Joseph Stalin was dictator of the Soviet Union, by the way, this is an interesting picture because you can not only see Stalin there, but there's Mao Zedong making his pilgrimage to Moscow. When Stalin was the chairman of the Soviet Union, the cult of chairman reached new heights, or rather depths. Oh, look at this. All these spontaneous workers who just happen to have the same picture. Isn't this a wonderful example of spontaneity? As the people just demonstrate their love and adoration for Joseph Stalin, all seems to be the same picture. Isn't that extraordinary? What a coincidence. And so you've got the Marx brothers, Karl Marx, Friedrich Engels, Vladimir Lenin. These are the trilogy, the trinity of the Soviet atheistic militant religion. And all their new weapons would have to be paraded in front of Lenin's tomb. And they started this even in Red China. You'd see Stalin's posters up there and the hammer and sickle and the red star, just in case you missed the point and you can't read Chinese. Stalin statues. Well, the people in East Berlin demonstrate their love for the Soviet leader by throwing rocks at the T-34 tanks. And whenever they could, they would burn Lenin's posters. This is blasphemy and treason to the cult of the chairman and the cult of the atheistic religion. So you must understand that the way it works today, you can blaspheme the name of Christ in universities. In fact, it's probably the only way you can mention Jesus acceptably in the average secular humanist university. You can't mention him respectably. Now, if you were to say something negative about Lenin, Marx, Mandela, Mao, or Buddha, Confucius, you could be in serious trouble because that would be hate speech and they couldn't tolerate that in university. But blaspheming Christ is fair game. In fact, it's encouraged. But bear in mind, it's not that our present state doesn't believe in blasphemy. They do have blasphemy laws. You're not allowed to criticize Mandela, Mao, or any of the idols of the New World Order. If you do that, you're in trouble. You can blaspheme Christ. So to say we don't believe in blasphemy laws isn't true. Today, blasphemy is to suggest that the state is wrong or that these idols are not wonderful, perfect. But here you've got people in Hungary. This is Budapest, 1956. People burning pictures of Lenin and toppling the massive idol of Stalin. This is 1956, the uprising in Hungary and Budapest. Russians out of Hungary. These are brave people, 1956, not even having their faces covered, identifying themselves with hostility to the communist occupation. Soviet response was to come in and kill hundreds of thousands of people, something like 250,000 people killed by the Soviets in a clampdown on the uprising in 1956. The people brought trams out to try and block roads. They just got burned out. You can see the tanks coming in, and they literally were blowing up towns. And this is the destruction and the mass murder in Budapest. This is what Budapest looked like. This, you would think, is Second World War damage. No, this is 1956. How they dealt with, well, to use the South African term, protests. Because the government turned out tanks and blew buildings to pieces and killed 250,000 people in suppressing the protest. Well, finally, in 1989, the statues did come down. and Lenin idols were gone, decapitation and all the rest of it. And in Addis Ababa, this massive statue of Lenin, I heard from an Ethiopian, the only good thing about the statue of Lenin outside Addis Ababa, it looked like he was walking towards the airport, therefore hopefully to leave the country. Well, they toppled him in 1991 when they kicked Mengistu out. Mengistu now lives in Zimbabwe and is a guest of the ZANU-PF government. In Romania, Communist Party General Secretary Nicolae Ceaușescu became the focal point of emperor worship. And the world hasn't seen emperor worship like this since the time of the Caesars. Every building had these ridiculous posters. I mean, pathetic. Over 8,000 hymns of praise were composed honoring the communist dictator Ceaușescu, and the poor kids would have to sing these at school every day. Literally millions of his pictures adorned homes, offices, schools, government buildings. And by the way, what's the one on the door for? 1st of May. That's what they're advertising. 1st of May, May Day. Really serious. May Day is to the communists what Christmas or Easter would be to us. Well, here you've got the face of resistance in Romania. And by the way, the V, that's not peace, that's V for victory over communism. It was the symbol throughout Eastern Europe. V being raised like this was a sign of resistance to communism. And to be even more clear, they cut a hole in the middle of the Romanian flag to take out the hammer and sickle and the hated Red Star and the AK-47. And this was a symbol of the Christmas Revolution 1989. And people celebrating Christmas openly in the streets for the first time in 45 years. Because Christmas had been banned. Now you can go and see idols all over the place. And by the way, that's not a Bible lifting up. That's Mao's little red book. Because in China, liberation for the people meant a bullet in the back. Tiananmen Square, June 1989. A good symbol of the resistance of one person standing in front of the Soviet tanks in Red China with nothing but a school books in his hands. By the way, we do not have any evidence that that student survived. 9,000 students were killed in Tiananmen Square that day. As the army was mobilized, they literally drove over the student protesters with their tanks and machine gunned them. There was no survivors of their protests. That's the way the Chinese dealt with it there. You hear people talking about Sharpeville, but who talks about Tiananmen Square? 9,000 students killed in peaceful protest. They weren't even throwing rocks. Well, if you go into Kazakhstan, you can see an idol to their illustrious chairman, dictator, whatever you want to call it. And Hollywood certainly has produced many celebrity cults, Invictus being a classic example. However, the extravagant praise and idolizing of Nelson Mandela as a hero, martyr, and ideal example has exceeded all bounds. This must be one of the most extravagant, excessive examples of idolatry in our time. The mythology and idolatry surrounding the Mandela cult is startling. It starts off, of course, with the miracle election, and I don't know if you can remember all the posters that we had in 1994. There were more parties running than there were parties that actually got elected to parliament. Yeah, exactly. And, of course, Mandela for president. In fact, he was the only one there. Nice that they were telling you before the elections he has the people's choice. But you know what the people mean. You're not people. I once was at a communist meeting when they spoke about the people shall rule. And I said, well, I'm one of the people too. And they said, no, you're not. Huh? What do you mean? I'm not a person. He says, no. Well, what are people? Members of the party. You're not a member of the Communist Party. You're not a person. According to the definition of the communist lexicon, the people shall govern means the party shall govern, which means the Politburo shall govern, which means the dictator chairman shall govern. So don't delude yourself that you're part of the people. You're not part of the people if you're not a Communist Party member. So this was the kind of photo op media campaign. It was pretty overwhelming. And in this interesting ballot situation, and it was incredible how many you had listed off there in these ballot papers, but you may recall they not only had the name of the party, but for those who couldn't read, they had the picture. In case you didn't understand the symbolism, you had the face of the main leader. So you were actually voting for the person more than for the principles in many cases. Peace, freedom, and the vote. Well, did we get peace? I was told the moment you abolished apartheid, there'd be no more strikes, boycotts. We'd no more have tires burning in the streets or stones being thrown at cars, as you've noticed. So, the long lines, there was real hope. People were desperate for hope. And I think there was a real, genuine sense of goodwill. And many people thought this was heralded a dawn of peace and freedom. And of course, there was every expectation that things should be better because sanctions were being dropped, foreign aid was coming in, conscription had ended, the war had ended. Well, how could the economy not go up? And yet, when Mandela became president, we had 70,000 commercial farmers feeding 100 million people, and today we have less than 28,000 farmers feeding 40 million people, while our population has doubled from 28 million then to 56 million now. Actually, I think it's 58 million now. So we can't even provide enough food for our own population, whereas before we were producing four times more food than our entire population. Not only that, but the South African rand was closer to 2 rand back then to the dollar, and now it's closer to 14 rand to the dollar. And the dollar's gone down too, so that doesn't mean much for our money. Nevertheless, there were a lot of people who hoped and had, look at that, many cultures, one nation. Well, but now we're told by the government that they're going to take farms away from the white farmers and give it to our people, which means that white South Africans are not South Africans and are not people. So they've managed to take all the hopes and, indeed, after victory, what? There's so much goodwill and good intention that when they start this Nelson Mandela Day, some people thought it was a once-off, but next thing, no, it's not once-off. And notice, they are having Nelson Mandela Month was the next move. I mean, not enough to have a Nelson Mandela Day. They then decided to go even beyond that. Everyone must spend 67 minutes to change the world. Where did they get the 67 minutes from? Nelson Mandela gave 67 years to serving the world. We must give 67 minutes every Nelson Mandela Day to serve him. So what are you doing for your 67 minutes on Mandela Day? Well, this is what I'm doing. I'm producing a video presentation, screen capture, and audio that we can share on why we should not observe Nelson Mandela Day. Jimmy Carter, not my favorite U.S. president, said Nelson Mandela has given all of us a wonderful opportunity and also a duty to do something positive and active on Mandela Day. So what are you going to do on Mandela Day? And this creep, Jimmy Carter, managed to betray 13 countries in the hands of communism in his worthless 4 years as president, including Rhodesia. One of his highest foreign policy goals was to betray Rhodesia into the hands of Mugabe and turn to Zimbabwe. And he also betrayed America's best ally in the Middle East, the Shah of Iran, into the hands of the Ayatollahs. And we aren't finished with that legacy yet either. You can change your world. Make an imprint. And of course, the newspapers, the wall murals, the face paint, the hand, and the artwork, just the amount of ingenuity that people are doing. Imagine if all the Christians in this country spent 67 minutes on evangelizing our country. I mean, imagine the impact we could make if we did something for Jesus. You got these people, I mean, honestly, I'm sure these people are sincere and they're well-meaning, and some of the things they're doing is good. Planting trees, doing all sorts of interesting things. Here's a Mandela lookalike with a Madiba birthday cake. The children's schools having birthday cakes to celebrate Madiba's birthday. Even preschools. I mean, this is indoctrination. Shame. These poor kids deserve better. Food parcels. Now, of course, Christians all year round, I trust, are taking food to the starving, helping people disadvantaged. But this has been done in the name of Nelson Mandela. I think most Christians do things without making a big scene about it. But some of these look like pretty good meals and impressive things, donations to libraries. There's a lot of goodwill and actions, but why is this not being done in the name of God? And are they trying to replace God with a human idol? Which I'm sure they are. In fact, this sort of thing, ID cards and, oh my, they renamed the University of Port Elizabeth Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University, which I think is really cheap. If you want to honor Mandela, build him a university. Don't steal an existing university and rename it. just like them doing the same thing with the roads, renaming roads after, I mean, build them a road. But still, how do you like this one, the human chain? What is a human chain? What does this mean? I'm not too sure, but I think it's a crib from our Christian pro-life chains. But what are they actually standing for? What is that standing actually doing? Why were they on trial in Rivonia in 1964? They don't mention the hundreds of thousands of petrol bombs, the limpet mines, the grenades and so on they're organizing in order to cause revolution, chaos throughout the country, and the many people who were killed, including by the petrol bomb under Nelson Mandela's Mkhwanazi, which incinerated a grandmother and her granddaughter in Johannesburg Central Station. But those are things, you mustn't ruin a good story with the facts. So, make Mr. Mandela's birthday really special, make a donation to his charities. Well, you want to know something about his charities, like his children fund. Naomi Campbell, the model, supermodel, I think they call her, she testified at the Hague International Court of Justice trial for Charles Taylor, the dictator, mass murderer, hand chopper, author, blood diamond, chief of Liberia. And in the trial for him for his crimes against humanity, Naomi Taylor testified that while she was a guest in Cape Town at the president's mansion as a guest of Nelson Mandela, she was given a handful of uncut diamonds, blood diamonds, by Charles Taylor in return for services rendered, not mentioned what those were. And she gave those handful of diamonds into the hands of Nelson Mandela as a contribution to Nelson Mandela's children's fund. Except for the fact that when that came out at this trial, people going through the records couldn't find any evidence of any diamonds or equivalent or donation from Mandela or linked to Naomi Campbell ever listed in the funds for the Nelson Mandela's Children's Fund. Interesting how Mandela could be involved with a blood diamond mass murdering thug like Charles Taylor, and that he could take a donation worth, I'm guessing conservatively in the hundreds of thousands of rands, a handful of diamonds, what do you think? And somehow it's not a scandal, nothing to see here, nothing to report next, and it just somehow never came. And how did he die being a multimillionaire when the only job he ever had was being president for 5 years and he only got 200,000 odd a year? Therefore, how did he make so many hundreds of millions that his kids were squabbling over in the courts afterwards? But don't worry about that. He obviously wasn't corrupt. So donate £2, text this and the other Nelson Mandela Foundation and Children's Fund. Long Walk to Freedom, they made a film, should be read by every person alive. And if you can't, don't worry, they'll screen the film for the kids in schools. In fact, the Long Walk to Freedom film is required viewing in many schools. I remember when we had this 45-cent stamp, because our person doing the mailing at that stage came with sheets of this, and at that stage we had an 8,000 mailing list. And I said, "Onder hier om stander hier, daar is jy mal." Nope. And they said, "But then we'll need to put two or three stamps on to make it up to that." That's fine. We'll do that. But we're not sending stamps to Nelson Mandela on a Frontline Fellowship mailing overseas. And at that point, I started a rumor, which later came back to me from people who knew that was true, just to prove how rumors work. So I started out that, you know, that the government had a 6 million rand investigation to why the Mandela presidential stamps weren't working. And at the end, the investigation discovered the people were spitting on the wrong side of the stamp. And that came around, and finally I had people telling me that and that it was true. So it's so easy to start a rumor. These are the kind of Robben Island, I mean, you know, this is just all kinds of amazing propaganda. By the way, notice the 1964 to 1982, because in 1982 he was taken off Robben Island and put in five-star prison, Fairstair, yeah, which many called five-star, and he is actually in a warden's house which had a swimming pool and very nice conditions, and I mean really, really nice conditions. Nevertheless, in the Invictus film, they go into Mandela's cell and say, "Mandela was locked in this cell for 30 years. Now, they only had him in police custody for 26 years. He was on Robben Island between 64 and 82, but rounded off to 30. And even though they were allowed out of the prison cell every day during daylight hours, and he had to be in the cell after dark, or in time for dark, doesn't matter. In Clint Eastwood's version of the film, he was locked in the cell for 30 years. Again, who cares about facts? Well, that was for his own, it was his own garden that he did as one of his sort of hobbies. So he chose, that wasn't a job they gave him. That's one of the things he wanted to do. And yes, there's a picture of him with the sunglasses and his hat, leaning on a spade there, which is interesting because he told me when I met him that the Boers wouldn't allow him to wear sunglasses in Robben Island. Now, maybe they didn't at the very beginning, but there's a picture of him wearing sunglasses. So obviously it wasn't for the whole time. Ah, the money. Yes. Freedom. And no end of art, ingenuity, sketches. And you can only imagine that the people who are doing this really think that they're serving humanity and maybe they're inspired by them. But if they would just study the Bible and study the life of Christ, they may find some more inspiration of someone who is really worthy of their attention. There are people who have done more and better than Nelson Mandela. But all the same, yes, cupcakes. Wouldn't this improve your appetite to eat a Mandela cupcake? Or an ANC cupcake? I don't know. Personally, that would make me sick. But,
HIV ribbon on that cupcake.
Yeah,
that's,
there we go.
That's not very attractive.
Wouldn't you like to eat an HIV ribbon?
Absolutely not.
No, me neither. Woodwork. All kinds of woodwork. Busts. I mean, we could throw you dead with Nelson Mandela clothing designs, artworks. And, of course, 4-6-6-6-4. That was his prison number, and a lot of people they've even marketed it. His family continues to get millions from the 4-6-6-4. It's in your hands. What's in your hands? I have no idea. But whatever's in your hands, they want it. And you can give it to them. This is the Mandela tour. I look at this, and I just think, this is just a tragic example. If people today are looking and thinking, how could people in the Roman Empire have been so stupid as to burn incense before Nero? I mean, really, were they so shallow? Were they such cowards? Were they such sheep? Well, it's not like it's not being done now. This is the modern equivalent of burning incense in front of Caesar. And would you want to wear some of these Madiba shirts, which are grossly overpriced? Most of this is profit going to the Mandela Foundation for his kids to sue one another over. And you might, oh, this is great. You can get a Nelson Mandela tattoo. Yay! I mean, this is what everybody would want. Now, here, forget about the Trinity. They've now got a quadrology or something. But, right, that's meant to be Mandela, by the way. That's not a good one. That's Malcolm X. That's MLK or Michael King. And that's Barack Hussein Obama. Okay, well, yuck. Outside the Palace of Westminster in London, you've got a statue to Nelson Mandela. Sometimes people have put a tie around it as protest, but that is right next to a Winston Churchill statue, and personally I think they deserve one of them, with a Madiba shirt again. And I think he's saying the fish that got away was this big. There are other statues and monuments, and this is quite cleverly done, but still interesting what they're coming out with. I think what they're meant to be is a sort of like, is it a spear or something going in? But it's an interesting piece of artwork if they could have chosen a more meaningful project. Now look at this. Look at the size of the people and look at the size of the idol. And here they've all got birds that they want to release. There's old Jacob Zuma. And of course, notice it's the communist clenched fist, the right hand with a clenched fist. That is the fist of rebellion in the face of God. You go to Sandton, and they have got Nelson Mandela Square, an obscenely colossal, out of all proportion, size of Mandela there. And personally, I think the Sandton people deserve it, because they would have all voted this way, and this is exactly what they wanted. And now they're living in a crime zone. And, yep, shame. Poor kids being forced to pose under an idol like this. And again, you've got these kind of statues. They're trying to rename Port Elizabeth Nelson Mandela Bay Municipality. I don't know if it's going to catch on. They are, interestingly, Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University. which I remember going there. We ran a Bless the Nations conference here, and the buildings look exactly the same. They didn't build a thing. They just changed the name. This is what was there back in the 80s and the 90s. And now it's called Nelson Mandela Bay University. Don't feed the monkeys. Yes. So, it continues. Cruella de Vil, Patricia de Lille, ex-PAC, renamed Settlers Way, Nelson Mandela Boulevard. Personally, I think she's not just a cheat and a thief, but she's cheap as well, because why didn't they build him a new road? Why did they rename one that's already been named after the settlers? And Nelson Mandela Bridge, which of course already existed, but they're just renaming previous bridges after him, which is really cheap and it's dishonest. That's a good title, The Selling of a Legend. This is what it is. It's all over fighting. The family fights over the spoils. Interestingly, because at Nelson Mandela's election in 1994, the only election he ever took part in, his eldest daughter said, and it was reported in the front page of Sunday Times, neither I nor any of my siblings would ever vote for our father because of how he abused our mom and how he abandoned and neglected us. Now, that's interesting because when Donald Trump was running for election, he not only had all his children supporting him, he had all his ex-wives supporting him. I mean, how do you get your ex-wives to support you for anything? So Donald Trump manages to get all his family supporting him, but he's evil. But Nelson Mandela's own children wouldn't vote for him, but he's just the best. Interesting. I like this one too at the top here. Every dog has his day. You're in our prayers, Madiba. He's in our prayers. Well, I certainly hope he was, and I've prayed for Nelson Mandela personally while with him, even though he said he'd rather not. But isn't he the one who abolished prayer in Parliament? And we're asked to pray for Mandela, the man who banned prayer in Parliament. He wouldn't even allow a minute of silence. Parliament in Cape Town had for 134 years always started in prayer in the name of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ until 1994, May 1994, just before the worst storm to Cape Town hit, causing our first great penguin rescue operation. Mandela cancelled prayer in Parliament. No Bible reading, no prayer, and not even a minute of silence to acknowledge a higher source of authority above ourselves. But fair enough, we do pray for him, even if he abolished prayer in Parliament and kicked it out of schools too, by the way. We certainly tried. And here they've got remembering him in churches with stained glass windows. This, I believe, is the African Methodist Episcopal Church. Choirs have sung songs and hymns in praise of Nelson Mandela. Concerts and events have been organized in his honor. Massive posters have been erected on civil centers. The Department of Education has apparently replaced education, teaching children how to think, with indoctrination, teaching children what to think. In order to enable Nelson Mandela to be entered into Guinness Book of Records, various publicity stunts have been prompted by the Ministry of Education, including requiring children of all ages in the classroom during school time to write birthday cards to this political leader and to sing happy birthday to him on 18 July to create new records. So one year it was, we're all going to write birthday cards that he's in the Guinness Book of Records, the man who received the most birthday cards. And then Department of Education just said, you're all going to do it. And then they all had to sing happy birthday to Mandela on the 18th of July next year. And then they entered in Guinness Book of Records. Nelson Mandela, the most people sing happy birthday to him at the same time. On and on. These are meaningless. Absolute meaningless publicity stunts by a Ministry of Education that's totally abused their rights. Now, school children were required to write tributes and dedications praising Nelson Mandela, and no dissent was permitted. I know this because after Lenora got cancer and we discovered that we weren't managing in our homeschooling, because while the girls were doing just fine, the boys weren't. They needed supervision. I mean, that's the thing with homeschooling. When you have girls first, you begin to think that you're a really great homeschooling parent. And when the boys come along, you begin to feel you're a total and utter failure, because they don't do their schoolwork when you're not monitoring them totally. So we put Calvin into a local independent Christian school, Cannons Creek. Next thing, he tells me he's got to write a tribute to Nelson Mandela. I said, no, you don't. They must mean you just must write an article about him, keep it objective, and give the facts. And said, no, he said, it's got to be a tribute. That's ridiculous. How could it be a tribute? You don't support him. How are you going to write tribute to someone who legalized abortion? So I went to see the principal. And the principal confirmed, yes, it must be a tribute. It's got to be positive. I said, can you name one country, I mean a free country in the world, not a communist dictatorship, where children are required to write a tribute about a political figure? She said, no, I can't. And I said, neither can I. This is a directive to all schools and Ministry of Education. I said, is Cannons Creek independent? Yes, it is. Are you Christian? Yes, we are. Why are you doing something with the Department of Education? I asked, do you get any money from the Department of Education? No, we don't get a thing from them. You just got to pay them taxes and pay them for registration and all that. So why are you doing this? The Department of Education asked us to. Aren't you independent? Yes. So what does independent mean? Now, if you can look past these six silly English schoolgirls, just look what's on the wall of their school. Nelson Mandela, Martin Luther King Jr., and mass-murdering thug who boasted of killing 7,000 people, including women and children, Che Guevara. What has any of that got to do with education? It's got a lot to do with indoctrination. That's what you're getting in English school classrooms. They thought the picture has been taken of them. Anyway, this is deeply disturbing on many levels. For example, are pro-life Christians expected to put their values to one side and deify a man who rammed through Parliament against all opposition his bill legalizing abortion in South Africa? Over 1.5 million babies have been killed officially, legally, with taxpayers' money in many cases in South Africa since President Nelson Mandela signed the Termination of Pregnancy Bill, top bill, as they call it, 1st of February 1997. Life begins at conception. Abortion is murder. We have been fighting for life and speaking up long before they legalized abortion in South Africa. South Africa's one of the only countries in the world I know of that had a strong pro-life movement long before they legalized abortion. They couldn't say we don't know that life begins at conception because we had doctors like Dr. Albie van Eeden go into Parliament, explain with pictures when life begins, how at 3 weeks after conception you have the brainwave, the heartbeat that can be measured. At 6 weeks after conception, you have the brainwave that can be measured. Abortion is the ultimate child abuse. How can this government justify? Other governments might say, well, you know, when we legalized abortion, we didn't know that abortion is stopping a beating heart. We didn't know about the development. We didn't have ultrasound. Well, now we do. This government legalized abortion in the face of all the evidence and all the opposition. We had a lot of evidence, huge amount of evidence against it. And we mobilized strongly. Marched to Parliament, protested, made a stand, person as a person, no matter how small. And, of course, at Mary Stopes' portrait, you notice you won't see these signs anymore. They realized they were just giving us a nice backdrop for our pictures, so they took those signs down. The Lord hates hands that shed innocent blood. And Nelson Mandela legalized it against all opposition. Everyone that gave submissions to Parliament was protesting against the legalization of abortion. It's the ultimate child abuse. And yet, he says it's a human right. It's not a human right, it's human sacrifice. Abortion is our national sin. We cannot expect God to bless a nation that destroys its children. And so we've made our stands, growing, growing, gone. Nelson Mandela is the blood of 1.5 million babies on his hands. In God's court, abortion is murder. We are not going to write a tribute or a eulogy to somebody who was the most instrumental key person who thrust this through Parliament against all opposition, against all logic, against all evidence, scientific and medical. And so we've got to speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves. The UN General Assembly may speak of Nelson Mandela's promotion of the rights of children and other vulnerable groups, but under his presidency, pornography was legalized. The South African Police Service's Child Protection Unit reported that child rape increased over 400% as a result of the legalization of pornography in South Africa, which Mandela signed into legislation. We've made our strong stand about porn destroying minds, calling people back to the Bible. I will set before my eyes no vile thing. Pornography degrades women. We've delivered yellow cards to SABC and Seapoint complaining about their blasphemy and pornography that they broadcast, and ETV, as we call them, evil TV. marched to Parliament, presented to them, produced the books that have documented how the pornography plague wrecks families, marriages. And along with pornography comes human trafficking. Human trafficking and prostitution are two sides of the same coin. And we've gone to Parliament. We've protested. By the way, this Mavericks, which we've protested outside several times, is right opposite Central Police Station, Cape Town. Directly opposite the police station. Probably. And it's been proven Mavericks is involved in human trafficking. And they can do it right next to the police station because they think they're probably safer doing that. And so human trafficking is just slavery. I mean, there's no other word for it. Trafficking and slavery is the same thing. 27 million slaves in the world today, more than there were in the days of William Wilberforce. The General Assembly may claim that Nelson Mandela contributed to the struggle for democracy internationally and the promotion of a culture of peace throughout the world, yet he closed down South Africa's embassy in the Republic of China, Free China, on the island of Taiwan, and he opened up South Africa's embassy in Communist China, Red China, a one-party dictatorship with a brutal human rights record. Now, where's this human rights culture he's talking about? Nelson Mandela welcomed South Africa, the longest reigning dictator in the world, Fidel Castro. He gave him the highest award any country can offer. Mandela assembled both houses of parliament for Fidel Castro to address. That's a rare privilege. Who else has had a privilege like that? As president, Nelson Mandela supported some of the worst dictatorships on the planet, such as Castro's Cuba, which has closed thousands of churches, imprisoned tens of thousands of pastors and house church leaders, and murdered hundreds of thousands of Christians. Not to mention Robert Mugabe's Zimbabwe, which has become a killing field, where blood diamonds have been extracted, where people get beaten in the main street by the police simply for having a prayer march, where people are murdered by the tens of thousands simply for being Matabele, the wrong tribe. People are shot just for being chiefs. Farmers are attacked. 5,600 farms of commercial white farmers destroyed by Nelson Mandela's so-called land reform. When this man had a bottle smashed over his head in Samora Machel Avenue in Harare, he asked the police who were watching, "Aren't you meant to protect the citizens of this country?" And the police said, "No, our job is to enforce the policy of the government." And this is what goes on in Zimbabwe. And these people have no recourse because the government is a bunch of criminals. They can't even spell the name of their country. Yeah, it's pretty bad. When more than half of the total population flee the country, that's a vote of no confidence in the government. His support for communist China, for Gaddafi's Libya, for Saddam Hussein's Iraq, and numerous other states notorious for human rights abuses, and yet the UN can praise his championing of human rights. The General Assembly's resolution may speak of Nelson Mandela's dedication to the service of humanity and to gender equality, yet under him, pornography was legalized, prostitution effectively decriminalized, human trafficking exploded in South Africa. Massively, the destruction of morals and families and faith in this country is huge. Incidents of rape exploded exponentially, as sex shops and pornography was for the first time allowed in this country. The UN Declaration describes Nelson Mandela as a prisoner of conscience. However, the fact is not even Amnesty International, a very left-wing organization. They refused to take Nelson Mandela's case because they said he was not a political prisoner. He had committed numerous violent crimes, over 250-odd, and he had a fair trial and he had a reasonable sentence. In fact, when Nelson Mandela was sentenced to life imprisonment, the Rand Daily Mail and The Star, two of the most notoriously left-wing, virtually communist newspapers in the country, praised the leniency of this judge for giving him such a light sentence. Because as they all knew at the time, if Nelson Mandela had committed those crimes in France, he would have been guillotined. If he had committed those crimes in Britain in 1964, they would have hung him. If he had committed those crimes in America, they would have electrocuted him. Virtually every country on the planet would have executed a person for treason, violent terrorism, revolution, and murder, as Mandela pleaded guilty to in Parliament, in the court. And so all the leftists around the world were praising the leniency of the sentence because no one expected him to get anything less than a death sentence for the charges. So this judge was the toast of every liberal around because, wow, what a lenient sentence. And now they're trying, oh, you know, how much he suffered as a political prisoner of conscience. Rubbish. He wasn't therefore writing a poem like Alexander Solzhenitsyn. The most radical newspapers of the day praised the leniency of the court in giving such a light sentence. In 1964, anyone in the world who committed such a crime would have been executed. And so even the Rand Daily Mail, the most outspoken newspaper in the country, a supporter of Nelson Mandela, praised the sentences by the judge. The sentences pronounced by Judge De Wet at the close of the Rivonia trial are both wise and just, they say. The law is best served when there's firmness tinged with mercy, and this was the case yesterday. The sentences could not have been less severe than those imposed. The men found guilty had planned sabotage on a wide scale and had conspired for armed revolution. As the judge pointed out yesterday, the crime for which they were found guilty was really high treason. The death penalty would have been justified. Now, this is the most liberal newspaper in the country saying this. These are the facts of history. Sentencing Mandela to imprisonment instead of letting him be hanged was an act of mercy on the part of his political enemies. Mandela had therefore every reason to be grateful and no reason to harbor a grudge against him. He owed his very life to them. Nelson Mandela was the founder and the head of Umkhonto we Sizwe, MK, the Spear of the Nation, the terrorist wing of the ANC, and of the Southern Communist Party. He pleaded guilty to 156 acts of public violence, including mobilizing terrorist bombing campaigns, which planted bombs in public places, including Johannesburg railway station, where grandmother and her daughter were incinerated. This included the Joburg railway bombing. Many innocent people, including women and children, were killed by Nelson Mandela's terrorists, MK terrorists. President Barack Hussein Obama, when condemning the Boston bombings, remember, two people died in the Boston bombings, was it? And, of course, people were crippled and killed. Anytime bombs are used to target innocent civilians, it is an act of terror, he said. Well, I agree. I mean, this is one time I can actually agree with Barack Obama. Well, he should get his feet off the table if he's got any manners. Obama denounced the Boston bombings as cruel, savage, and malevolent. Yet he still seems to honor a man responsible for many such terrorist attacks. Obama praises Mandela as his role model. Well, how can you condemn the Boston bombers and praise Mandela? What's the difference? Well, the Boston bombers didn't kill as many people. Now, imagine if one of these terrorists died in a shootout with the police and the other one is in prison. Now, imagine if 26 years later, the Boston bomber comes out of prison and he announces on TV, "I forgive the people who imprisoned me." I mean, would anyone be impressed in America? Oh, but they're all impressed when Mandela says he forgives the people who locked him up. We had nothing to forgive. South African President P.W. Botha, on a number of occasions, offered Nelson Mandela freedom from prison if he would only renounce terrorist violence. This Mandela refused to do. He stayed in prison at least another 6 years as a result of his refusal to accept that extremely generous offer. I think it was actually 8 years, because he was offered that in 1982. That's when he was moved from Robben Island to five-star prison warden's residence. And so Mandela was not a man of peace. Now, many may highly respect and idolize Nelson Mandela because of the Invictus film, which Clint Eastwood produced, and the very positive image portrayed throughout the mass media of him. Now, this Invictus film, interesting, the Springbok rugby team at that time under Francois Pienaar, by the way, is a very tall person, whereas this character, Matt Damon, is not. And Francois Pienaar is a Bible-believing, born-again Christian who loved the Lord and prayed before and after every meal, every match, on his knees. And there was a strong core of Bible-believing Christians in the Springbok rugby team. And Invictus film gives all the glory to Nelson Mandela, whereas the Springbok rugby team gave all the glory to Jesus Christ. The name of the film, Invictus, comes after a most anti-Christ poem written by William Ernest Henley, which says, if you go down to, let's go down to the last part of this, the last stanza. "It matters not how straight the gate." What's the gate that's straight? Well, Jesus is the gate, and he's the narrow gate. "It matters not how charged with punishments the scroll." What scroll is charged with punishments? The Bible. "I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul." That is repeated twice in the Invictus film that Clint Eastwood directed and produced on Nelson Mandela. And it's with soaring music at the climax of the movie, too. It's not just the title, in case you missed it. The name of the film is Invictus. This was written by an antichrist pagan who hated God. And this is a fist of rebellion in God's face. And yet, there are Christians, so stupid, that just across the road at the Cornerstone University graduation service, I heard the Chancellor of Cornerstone University in the graduation final address to the students, theological students, say, "I charge you in the words of Nelson Mandela's character in the Invictus film. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul." How can any Christian say that? Mind you, that was not the stupidest thing of the day. There was 3 hours of idiocy, but that was probably the most blasphemous of them all. And I went to my friend who is the Chancellor of the university later, and he had quoted several times from Martin Luther King and so on and so forth. I said, "You know that Martin Luther King Jr. is a perjurer and a plagiarist and a communist and so on?" He said, "Yes, and a serial adulterer and pervert, yes." "So why do you quote from him?" He said, "Peter, if I don't quote from him, people think I'm a racist." I said, "Well, now they know you're stupid and a coward." However, there are many South Africans who would disagree. Nelson Mandela remains a controversial figure. By the way, when this picture was published in the New York Times, they whited out the background because you wouldn't want to confuse the New York Times readers, New York Post readers, with the ham and sickle and the big star and a red flag. I mean, they might think he's a communist or something like that. So they whited it out. Who's this next to him? Lithuanian-born Russian. Colonel John Slova of the KGB, Mandela's handler. Under Nelson Mandela's presidency, an average of 25,000 people were murdered each year. Now, for you to get an understanding of the background, under H.F. Verwoerd, the average murder rate was 69 people murdered each year. Here's the devil. Mandela's a saint. He only had 25,000 people murdered every year. But to celebrate his birthdays, every year Nelson Mandela would regularly open prison doors and set many convicted criminals free, including armed robbers, murderers, and rapists, set free in amnesties to celebrate his birthday. Some of these were murdering and raping within 24 hours of being released. They call that recidivism, when a person who's a criminal reverts back to a crime after doing it within 24 hours is pretty much a record, though. Well over 100,000 people were murdered under Nelson Mandela's term as president. We lost more people murdered under Nelson Mandela's presidency than had died in all the wars, riots, and everything else we had before, and all the crime combined in 48 years. In 5 years of his presidency, we lost vastly more people, something like 10 times more people, and died in the 48 years of war, riots, violence, terrorism, and crime beforehand. But boy, he brought peace to our country. And so this is the kind of hypocrisy and nonsense that goes on. We've had how many hundreds of thousands of people murdered? And 4,000 farmers and their family members murdered. I'm not going to show the ugly pictures, but these are just some of the victims of people murdered by farm attackers since Mandela's presidency, under Mandela's presidency, actually. Many, many, many. This has been documented by Philip de Toy in the Great South African Land Scandal, and Land of Sorrow documents the first 20 years of farm attacks in South Africa. That came out about 5 years ago. And yet, Mandela claims he abolished the death penalty. He didn't abolish the death penalty. He abolished the death penalty for murderers, and he initiated death penalty for innocent victims and especially for babies. You can't kill the guilty, but you can kill the innocent. And so we've marched against all of the different things. There's so many different charges, so many facts. Truth is hate for those who hate the truth. In the 1970s, even while facing terrorism, riots, and engaged in a border war with the Cubans in Angola, the South African rand was stronger than the US dollar. However, after years of international sanctions and terrorism and violence, the South African rand fell to 2 rand to the dollar. This used to be a lot of money. I mean, I could buy more with this 1 rand when I was growing up than you can with 500 rand today. In Mandela's first 4 years as president, the rand lost 80% of its value and more than 2.8 million man days were lost to strikes. But I thought his presidency was going to end all the strikes and terrorism and violence and all that. And how did he lose so much of the value when we now had foreign aid and no sanctions and no war, no conscription? The national debt trebled under Nelson Mandela's presidency. Under Mandela, without a war, without sanctions, without riots, without conscription, with massive international foreign aid investment, the rand still plummeted down to 8 rand to the dollar, even to 10 rand to the dollar. Even publications like The Economist, a left-wing publication of South Africa, described Nelson Mandela's presidency at the time as a failure and said he's only good at making speeches and kissing babies. Economic deterioration, skyrocketing crime marred his presidency. It would also appear to be an abuse of education to require students to write a positive tribute or dedication to any political figure whom they and their family have serious reservations about. Education is teaching you how to think critically. Indoctrination is teaching people what to think. In any civilized and free society, there must be room for dissent. Medical personnel who do not want to be part of an abortion should not be forced against their conscience to participate. A teacher who believes in traditional family values should not be required to teach what they see as immorality and perversion, although Mandela tried to push that. Nor should any student be required to idolize, whether through an assignment or through singing the praise of a politician. However, we're meant to forget all these facts. We're meant to shelve our pro-life, pro-family moral convictions. We're meant to bow before this new idol, sing a politician's praises, and effectively burn incense before an image of Caesar. And remember, the ANC is only the front for the Southern Communist Party. The Southern Communist Party completely controls ANC, and ANC is the middle letters of cancer. Historically, Christians have refused to bow before any idol, nor give worship to the Creator alone, to anyone else. Bear in mind, Christians were not persecuted in the Roman Empire for worshipping Jesus. They were persecuted for refusing to worship Caesar. Christians today would never have had to face persecution because the average Christian today has no problem worshipping the state and Jesus. Just the state comes first. Daniel ended up in the lion's den because he refused to pray to the king. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were thrown into the fiery furnace because they refused to bow before the idol of Nebuchadnezzar. Countless Christians were thrown to the lions in the arena for refusing to engage in the statism of their day. They were not persecuted for worshipping Christ, they were persecuted for refusing to worship Caesar. What's the first creed and confession of Christianity? Jesus Christ is Lord. And they wanted you to say, Caesar's Lord. No, they could not. Jesus is not just Lord, he's Lord of lords, he's King of kings. We will not say Caesar's Lord. And for that, they went to the lions. Recently, Margaret Thatcher, arguably the most outstanding prime minister in British history. I personally think she is the best prime minister Britain had in the 20th century. But most of the United Kingdom did mourn and honour her memory and achievements. But it would not be reasonable to expect every child in every school in Great Britain to write a tribute to Margaret Thatcher. Nobody's attempted to do that. Because some would belong to families who would have disagreed with the economic policies. Some people in Britain are socialists. They would not want to support someone who is so rabidly anti-socialist, so strongly free market. Ronald Reagan is widely recognized the greatest president in modern American history, certainly in our memory. I would have said the best president America's had in my lifetime. But you couldn't imagine a requirement that every school child in America would have to write a positive tribute to Ronald Reagan. There surely would be some who disagree. Even though I think he did a phenomenally good job in fighting to win the Cold War. So nor is it reasonable to railroad schoolchildren in South Africa into a celebrity cult of any past president of South Africa. Politics is frequently divisive. That's why naming, for example, airports in South Africa after a politician, I think, is a bad idea. Always was a bad idea. It was a bad idea under the Nationalists, very bad idea under the ANC. Why name any airport after a political figure? It would be wiser seeking to focus our children's attention on that which is uplifting and edifying to all. Certainly no Christian can in good conscience participate in idolatry. God, our Creator, our eternal Judge, is the only one who deserves our worship, our praise, and our adoration. Back in 1995, we marched 30,000 people to Parliament. The next year, we marched another 10,000 to Parliament in 1996, protesting against Mandela's planned paganization of our country, legalizing of abortion, pornography, and all the rest. And as a result, I was summoned to Parliament, summoned by someone from the President's office to the president's mansion to meet with him, and he tried his charm on me. And he can be a very charming character. I mean, Nelson Mandela is a very charismatic figure in terms of his personality. And he, first thing he said as we sat down after shaking hands, he said, "So, Mr. Hammond, what were you doing in the years of struggle?" I said, "I was fighting people like you, sir." And he laughed, he smacked his knee, he stood up and he shook my hand again. He said, "I'm so glad to finally meet an honest white man." He said, "Every white I've met has told me so far he always opposed apartheid and he always supported me. I wondered how the National Party stayed in power 48 years when everyone opposed apartheid." And I said, "Well, make no mistake, Mr. President." I said, "We were not fighting for apartheid. We were fighting against communism. We were fighting against terrorism." And I pointed out that many of the people in our units were black, colored. We had a huge number of 3-2 Battalion, Navambo, Bushmen, others. So it was hardly a whites-only army. Well, he said, "Apartheid's the greatest evil in the history of the world." I said, "I cannot agree, Mr. President. That prize has got to go to your friends and supporters of the communists. They've left 169 corpses so far in the 20th century. And that's not foreigners killed by invading armies. That's civilians killed by their own governments in their own countries. 169 million people, civilians, killed by their own governments." And he's still silent, so I carried on. "That includes the over 66 million killed by Joseph Stalin and other communist dictators in the Soviet Union. The over 69 million people killed in Mao Zedong's Red China." He's still silent, so I carried on with, "And the 3 million killed under Pol Pot, Khmer Rouge, and Cambodia. And the over 1 million people killed in Ethiopia by Mengistu," who I knew was a personal friend of his. And he's still silent, so I carried on about, "And the hundreds of thousands murdered by Fidel Castro," who had just been his guest at this joint sitting in Parliament, "from Cuba," and went through a few others, Mugabe and so on. When I finished, he is staring up at the ceiling like he is seeing a vision, and he said, "When I was a prisoner of the Boers in Robben Island, they would not allow me to wear sunglasses. My eyes are very sensitive." I said, "Mr. Mandela, my eyes are also very sensitive, and I can appreciate how uncomfortable and how unpleasant that must have been. But surely you'd agree that hardly compares with the atrocities documented by Alexander Solzhenitsyn in the Gulag Archipelago." And he said, "48 years ago, the Dutch formed church justified apartheid from the Bible." I said, "Mr. Mandela, are you questioning the Christianity of people who 48 years ago justified apartheid? But I tell you, it won't be 48 years. People question your humanity for legalizing abortion. You have replaced apartheid with abortion. You're replacing discrimination on the basis of race with discrimination on the basis of age. And you're not giving these babies separate areas to live in or a separate voter's roll. You're taking away their right to life. You're snuffing them out before they can breathe one breath outside the mother's womb. Abortion is worse than apartheid." He went on to other, I think he turned to, at this point, Miriam Kane, who's the leader of ACA at the time, and said, "I'm surprised to see you here as a woman standing against women's rights." And she said, "Mr. President, I'm standing for equal rights for unborn women. And apartheid separated people of different races. Abortion separates a mother from her own child, separates a mother from its life support system." And she gave a few other great pro-life things, including the 3 weeks, 6 weeks, and so on. I then brought in, "Mr. Mandela, I believe that your Shishaba," that's the ANC's magazine, "was printed in East Berlin over all these years. I'm sure you are well aware that Berlin was divided by a Berlin Wall, by the Iron Curtain, separating people of the same family, often, between slave and free, and shooting people in the back for attempting to escape from one side to the other. Why do you feel the need to be so loyal and supportive to the communists who've had the most oppressive system in history?" And so we bounced backwards and forwards like this. But Mandela, at the end, he stood up and said, "You may take your pictures now." And without meaning to be offensive, I said, "No, thank you." But I hadn't even crossed my mind. We hadn't brought cameras. I mean, what would I do with a picture of me and Mandela? And so I said, "But we would." And he stood there with his jaw open, his mouth dropped like he was shocked. It was like we'd slapped him in the face with a fish. Maybe we're the first people he met that didn't want their pictures taken with him. I said, "But we would like to pray with you, Mr. President." And he said, "No, no, that's very private. I'd rather not. And I acted like I hadn't heard. I put a hand on his shoulder. Dominic Stevenson put a hand on the other shoulder, and we prayed, Lord God, may not give Mr. Mandela one moment's peace. May not give him a moment's rest until he does what he knows is right and acts legislation to protect the most innocent citizens of all, preborn babies, from the violence and the injustice of abortion. Lord God, do not give Mr. Mandela any rest until he does what he knows right, until he bows his knee to you as the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, the eternal judge. And Dominic Stevenson prayed something too. And afterwards, I could see he was simmering. He maintained his outward charade, but I could see he was steaming. As he said, my door is always open to you, Mr. Hammond. I'm always responsive to the concerns of your constituency. And that was Thursday. We marched on Tuesday. We met on Thursday. Monday morning, two senior representatives of the Inland Revenue Service knocked at our door of our old mission house in Harlequin Road, and it began going back 6 years, and it continued for 7 years. So it was a 13 years of a financial records audit. And we would have ended up in prison probably, but for the fact that our first chairman of the board, Doc Watson, was an accountant, a chartered accountant. And he kept up his chartered accountancy to the end of his days. And every time he came to the mission, he'd always want to see our books. And he hauled us over the coals at the beginning, not having adequate financial records and books and so on. And he could run his finger down a page like that, at that speed, and always find the inconsistency or what's wrong. I said, how do you do that? And he said, well, as chartered accountants, we were trained to be able to add up first time down a page. And he said, that was pounds, shillings, and pence. Before we had decimal point, which is so easy. So he had a real financial mind. And he instructed, guided, harassed, cajoled, threatened, and got us to have really good financial records. And if we hadn't, and I must say there was quite a few times I regretted having asked a chartered accountant to be our chairman of the board. But it was in God's foresight, foreknowledge, and wisdom that he provided the right chairman of the board who did exactly what was needed, that when these assassins from the government were set on us, the dogs of Mandela, they tried to close our mission down, and they failed. And praise God for that. And I must also say, Phyllis Lang, who we employed at that time to be our bookkeeper, did a sterling job answering all the stupid, mindless, worthless challenges, which included they wanted Avi David signed statements attested to by local police for every personal gift ever given to a children's birthday or for Christopher's medical bills of his kidney failure. We had our accountant lawyer who came in to help. He said, I've never seen anything so petty in all my life. You're a small operation. You've got a minuscule budget. I can't believe the government is wasting senior investigators' time on you. But that's the point. Nelson Mandela, he was charming to us openly, but he set his dogs on us. It is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then, and do not let yourselves be burdened again with the yoke of slavery. You, my brothers, were called to be free. But do not use your freedom to indulge a sinful nature. Rather serve one another in love. So, Mandela Day and the making of a new religion. Another modern idol is, of course, Martin Luther King Jr. We dealt with Churchill earlier this year. We'll deal with Franklin Delano Roosevelt. These are all just idols. Propaganda, deception, news media. Our goal is to destroy all idols. And books like these, which have the facts, Black Book of Communism, Death by Government, they help us smash the cultural Marxism that deifies and lifts up these Marxist idols. Of course, we try to have these on the ReformationSA.org website, on the Henry Morton Stanley School of Christian Journalism website, and on our Reformation 500 Facebook page. Any questions, any comments? Mandela Day, make a new religion. Yes.
If Mandela hadn't come into office, what would have been the plan to end the protest?
Okay, good question. Many people come up with, but Mandela did end apartheid. No, he didn't. He brought it back. Apartheid was voted out in 1983. In 1983, we had a referendum, which I voted yes for, to end apartheid. PW Border put that up, and as a result, we started massively increasing the franchise, and they had the tricameral parliament. There's all sorts of great things moving. We had already at that stage, Transguide got an independence in 1976. Sisky next, Vendor, Botswana. So there was a lot of movement that way. And at that point, especially Chief Gatsa Buthelezi was working to end apartheid peacefully and legally through Inkatha. In fact, as many people have said, it should be Dr. Buthelezi who gets the credit for ending apartheid. He did more to do it, and he did it legally. And he was working against revolution. He lost a lot of his people. Thousands of people were murdered for standing for peaceful ways of getting rid of it. It's said, and I've been at prayer rallies, organized a prayer breakfast, is a better term, prayer breakfast in a hotel, where Dr. Buthelezi said this very thing. Dr. Buthelezi said, Mandela didn't hasten the end of apartheid. He prolonged its life by about 30 years. He said, by Mandela launching the Operation Mayabu terrorism, it caused a clamping down, a drawing of the lager, a entrenching of position to resist communism, so that the violence of Nkuntu, he says, and the terrorism attacks, such as Cato Manor, where they butchered and killed the police at this Natal police station, which is just before the Sharpeville attack, which obviously the police there were nervous because they knew police had all been cooked and eaten down at Cato Manor. So they were very ready to defend themselves when this massive mob of tens of thousands surrounded the police station, and they panicked and fired when they came under rocks and so on being thrown at them. So the context is, as Chief Buthelezi points out quite rightly, South Africa was moving to relax the laws that were there primarily to protect us from the kind of things that were happening in Kenya with the Mau Mau. So when the Mau Mau started their massacres straight off the Second World War in the 1940s, the National Party came in 1948, and immediately, we don't want what's happening in Kenya and the Mau Mau murdering of farmers so on to happen here. So they brought in serious legislation, Suppression of Communism Act, Internal Security Act. And so things got tight as a result of this. Now, when the terrorism exploded in the Congo, people getting murdered by the hundreds of thousands, and all those missionaries getting slaughtered in the Congo back in 1960, this also led to more tightening. The Sharpeville terrorism and all those things just made it worse. The bomb attacks in the cities made it worse. So instead of South Africa relaxing and being more liberal, it got more in terms of survival and protection. And the more revolutions like Mozambique and Angola, it just made it worse. So actually communism, the Cold War, the Soviet threat, the terrorism, the car bombs, all the rest of it, the necklace murders, and Nelson Mandela's personal, against the instructions of the ANC's committee, the ANC's leadership had expressly forbidden a terrorist wing, expressly forbidden going into a armed struggle in 1960. Mandela, because he was also a member of the Southern Communist Party Politburo, senior member of it, and he admitted that only later, in fact, only when he died was admitted. Mandela was always a senior member of the Southern Communist Party Politburo, but he denied that just for tactical reasons. So he went against the leader, Albert Luthuli, of the ANC, and he launched this armed struggle. So the ANC actually didn't launch the armed struggle. It was done in their name, but the ANC leadership had forbidden it. Interesting, Albert Luthuli is almost forgotten today, even though he was the head of the ANC when Mandela was launching this terrorist campaign in his name against his instructions. Still, Dr. Buthelezi says Mandela and the ANC's armed struggle, terrorism, extended the life of apartheid another 30 years. We would have ended a lot earlier. Now, I know that despite all the terrorism and violence and the revolutions in Mozambique and Angola and all the rest of it, in 1983, we white South African voters voted to abolish apartheid, 1983. By the end of 1989, when P.W. Botha resigned, there was virtually nothing left of apartheid. Apartheid had been dismantled piece by piece. There was only two pieces of legislation left, and that was the separate voters' rolls and the Race Classification Act. Those are the only two left. Even group areas had gone by then. So, and I remember in the 80s, systematically, cinemas, restaurants, beaches, all got, and Cape Town led the way. The first abolishing of apartheid in South Africa was 1976, Simonstown, the Navy. The Navy scrapped apartheid first. The Southern Police scrapped it next. The Southern Army scrapped it next. When I was in the Army, 1980, we had the same uniform, same rank structure, and integrated units and all that sort of thing. So already, 1979, the Southern Army had already gotten rid of apartheid, at least before then. The Southern government was getting rid of it, also in the mid-80s. The American companies in South Africa never got rid of apartheid. In 1986, when they were ordered by Congress to leave, Ford, General Motors, and all that, and P, they had separate restaurants, separate bathrooms, separate everythings, separate ranks and pay scales. And so the American companies practiced apartheid when the South African Army, Police, and Navy had already abolished it. 10 years after the Navy had abolished it. So it's not quite as simple as people make out. And then, just to make it even more intriguing, so F.W. de Klerk had nothing really to get rid of except separate voters' rolls and Race Classification Act, which he did. So when Mandela came in, there was no apartheid legislation for him to abolish. He brought it back. He brought back race classification. So, evidence in my family's experience, my two daughters born 1991, 1993, they have no race mentioned in the race classification, although they were apartheid babies. But there's no race in their birth certificates. My two sons born free, 1995, 1999, they've got race in their birth certificates. Just another evidence of how Mandela brought race classification back for affirmative action, and so that we could have quotas for the rugby and so on. So interesting how he gets the credit for example, the 1995 World Cup rugby victory, which is glamorized in the Invictus film. But actually, it was the apartheid rugby team that won the World Cup. He did his best to sabotage it by wanting people on the base of race to be pushed in, like he got Chester pushed in, even though he didn't qualify, just on the base of race. And so the team didn't win because of Mandela. I mean, if he could have helped us to win a World Cup, why didn't he help them World Cup soccer in 2010 to win? So it's nonsense that any politician can get the credit. But he so undermined it that our Springboks haven't won any since, have they? World Cup. How about that? Okay. Right. So it took from 1995, it took 22 years before they got another chance. No, I'm getting it wrong. It took 12 years before they got another chance to win. So he actually eroded what was a very good team. The team that won was the team that existed prior Mandela. He couldn't take the credit of something that won a year into his presidency, less than a year into his presidency. So, but anyway, Mandela didn't end apartheid. The person who should get the credit for ending apartheid is P.W. Botha. And interestingly enough, I heard just yesterday from Skalk Viskaki, P.W. Botha's son-in-law, that he heard in his hearing Nelson Mandela say to P.W. Botha, when Mandela was present visiting P.W. Botha, saying, "You're the one who really should get the credit for abolishing apartheid." And that's absolutely true. And anyone with any memory, anyone who lived in the 80s would have to say, it's P.W. Botha who dismantled apartheid step by step. And the fact that they're giving the credit to Mandela is just communist propaganda. For the same reason, you'll have people saying that Vladimir Lenin overthrew the Tsar of Russia. Just rubbish. Vladimir Lenin overthrew the Parliament of Russia, the Duma. The Parliament of Russia requested the Tsar's resignation. The Tsar resigned in response to pressure from his Duma's Parliament. And for the people to say that the Tsar of Russia was a terrible, oppressive autocrat, and you needed the First World War and the Bolshevik Revolution to bring democracy to Russia, garbage. Tsar Nicholas II is the one who gave the power to Parliament and enabled Russia to have a parliamentary, a constitutional democracy with a Parliament. So that does make a good story to the communists. So, you know, let's just cut out the Parliament and the Tsar was overthrown by Lenin. It's not true. Similarly, instead of saying P.W. Botha abolished apartheid, de Klerk sold the country down the river and Mandela messed it up. That's not a good story. So much better. P.W. Botha was terrible and de Klerk was a wonderful reformer and Mandela saved the country and abolished apartheid. And they all lived happily ever after. So this narrative that they're giving us doesn't gel with the facts. But what I've just said is a whole series of thought crimes and treason to the New World Order.